What we need to know about Islam is that it's the world's fastest growing religion and the only significant religious system in the history of the human race with a socio-political structure of laws that mandate violence against the infidel.
Hank Canagraph of the Bible Answer Man talking about his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
The current narrative is that if you tell the truth in this regard, well, you'll radicalize Muslims. But that's pure propaganda. What we need to do is wake up to the truth concerning Islam.
You can meet and hear Hank Canagraph making the case against Islam at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. Collinsville is 15 miles east of St. Louis. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is a problem in developed countries. There's no doubt about it. There are very few exceptions. The birth rate. This is something that people tend to ignore because they assume that, well, in the past people had larger families because they needed them for various economic reasons. Larger families are not an economic necessity nowadays. The more developed a country is, the less children we need to have, the fewer children we need to have. And if you actually carry that out, project that out over the next 20, 30, 100 years, what you learn is, wow, those children are an economic necessity, not only today, but also in the future, for the future of the developed world. And there are places where the birth rate has fallen and fallen and fallen, but a few of them have made a turnaround. We're going to be talking about birth rate increases in Poland and in the former Soviet Republic of Georgia and how they did it and what it means. Joining us to do so, Lyman Stone, agricultural economist at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, advisor at Demographic Intelligence, author of recent columns titled Poland's Baby Bump and In Georgia, a Religiously Inspired Baby Boom. Lyman, welcome to Issues Etc.
Good to be here. Good to talk to you.
Why are countries like Poland and Georgia, why are they undertaking various measures, formal and informal, to increase their birth rates?
Simple. They're looking around and realizing that the next generation isn't there. It's just not there. Some of it has migrated to other countries, but much of it was simply never born. And they're looking ahead to the next 20, 30, 40 100 years of their country and asking, what will it mean to be Poland in 50 years? Will there be anybody who calls themselves Polish? How many will there be? Will there be enough to pay for pension obligations? Will there be enough to have a country that can be sovereign and independent? That's especially a concern in a country like Georgia, which doesn't always have friendly neighbors. These basic questions are extremely important, especially for a lot of these younger republics that still have a memory of not being independent.
Before we talk about the specifics of Poland and Georgia, should other European countries, perhaps even the United States, be thinking along similar lines, given the low birth rates that run across the board at various levels?
I think that the commonly shared experience in many developed countries of low and declining birth rates is a serious concern in every country. And in the U.S., we're seeing a particularly rapid decline in fertility right now. In terms of a policy response, my takeaway from Poland's experience in particular is that you can spend a lot of money and you don't get a lot of baby for your buck. So in terms of how we respond, I think it's important to do a little outside-the-box thinking and understand that while money may help, you can't just throw money at the problem. That won't be a solution on its own.
Well, let's talk about that attempted solution in Poland. What have they undertaken? What does it cost? And what have been the results?
So it's a program called 500 Plus Families. And so what it means is if you have two or more children, for each child beyond the first, you get 500 zlotys, which is their currency. This amounts to essentially 150 bucks a month in U.S. dollar terms for each child. And it's tax exempt as well. So this comes to a fairly substantial financial support for families. It's a cash check that you get each month for each child beyond the first. They also have child tax credits and things like that, similar to what we have. It's cost them a substantial amount of money, a substantial portion of their government budget, of their GDP, but it appears to have resulted in some increase in the birth rate there, particularly for second and third and higher parity children. Now, the trouble is that Poland's birth rate is phenomenally low. Even when you control for their older population, even when you compare to other Soviet countries, other Catholic countries in Europe, other Eastern European Catholic countries, Poland has a very low birth rate. So they were kind of desperate to find some solution. And so they're throwing a lot of money at the problem. If the U.S. were to do a similar program, it would cost us something like $100 to $200 billion every year and would get us about halfway from where we currently are at about 1.76 births per woman to stability levels of births, which is about 2.1 births per woman. So it'd be a lot of money just to get us halfway there.
By the numbers, in the long term, where did they finally get to? They didn't get to replacement, did they?
So no, they did not reach all the way to replacement. They had a low of about 1.29 children per woman, and today they have about 1.42 to 1.45. So that's a substantial increase over the last few years. I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at, but that's still a level where they can expect to see natural population decline for decades to come. I mean, with that birth rate, you just can't sustain a population. You'll have an older and older population. You'll have higher and higher mortality. And ultimately, you'll have fewer and fewer workers supporting a large retiree population.
So that solution has cost them a lot in the short term and has not benefited them that much, even though they did increase it, they made a substantial increase, it has not benefited them in the long term.
Yeah, so it's benefited them some, but I'm not sure if it's going to end up being cost effective. And you know, this is the problem with these fertility issues, is people look at a country or an organization or a body or a community that has low fertility, and everybody thinks that there's a quick fix, that if you just gave people vouchers for schools, maybe they'd have kids, or if you just cut them a check like such and such a country does, maybe then they'd have more kids, or if you just did this or that thing, then the problem would be solved. But the reality is that low fertility is an endemic condition of developed countries. We live in a society where two incomes often seem to be necessary for the conditions that we teach our children they should want to have when they grow up. We extend the years of education for men and women well into their mid to late 20s now in order to have a middle-class income, with the result being that people postpone having children later and later into years where it may be harder and harder to have kids. And this isn't because there's just one or two things going on. It's because systematically throughout our society, throughout Western societies, from the U.S. to Europe to East Asia, economic development simply makes it harder to have a big family. And it lowers the returns as well, because you're not getting this farm labor anymore.
Let's talk a little bit about a different approach, a less formal approach that was undertaken mm-hmm. in the former Soviet Republic of Georgia. What took place there?
Mm-hmm. So in 2007, the Patriarch of the Georgian Orthodox Church, Georgia is about a 90% Christian country, and most of that is members of the Georgian Orthodox Church, so a very devout country, one of the most devoutly Christian on earth, was concerned both with declining population in Georgia, but also very high abortion rates. And so Patriarch Ilya essentially said, look, anybody who has a third child or higher who is married and who is Georgian Orthodox, so you got to be married Georgian Orthodox, and it's got to be a third or higher child, he would personally baptize and become godfather to that child, right? So for me personally, you know, if President Harrison said, I'll personally baptize any third or higher child, that might not mean a whole lot to me personally. I mean, I like the guy, he's great, but I mean, as Lutherans, we don't necessarily prioritize the individual religious leader of the church the way that other traditions do. But for Georgian Orthodox believers, this was a big deal. The Patriarch is very spiritually important, also very politically important, also extremely popular as a national figure. So when he offered to do this, thousands of Georgians took him up on the offer. Since he began doing this in late 2007, Patriarch Ilya has baptized over 30,000 children in Georgia. That amounts to almost 6% of the total number of kids born in the country in the last decade. And that's about a third, about one in every three children who is a third or higher parity child. This is a demographically significant campaign of baptisms. And the result was that births rose, and particularly births of third or higher parity children. Just the line basically makes a V-shape around 2007. They were declining, and then they turn around and rise. There's also some evidence that abortion rates may have declined. The increase in births was almost exclusively among married women as well, and it mostly occurred in regions that had a very large amount, that had particularly high rates of Georgian Orthodox believers. Some of the regions in Georgia have Muslim communities that are regionally a larger share, and so those areas had smaller baby booms. All of this adds up to his campaign worked. Basically, the offer of this religiously associated prestigious baptism that was valuable to parents turned around at least part of the country's fertility trend. And today, Georgia is one of the only countries in the former Soviet Union to have hit below replacement fertility and recovered. So they today actually have above replacement fertility rates, which is extremely impressive for a small, low-income former Soviet country that has had multiple wars in the last 20 years. That's sort of an unusual place to see above replacement fertility. And what it really speaks to is the importance of culture, right? You can't just throw money at a problem. You need people's values, people's desires, people's view of the good and the laudable life to include children, and preferably a substantial number of children if you want to have a high birth rate as a country.
What can the United States learn from these attempts to increase birth rates in both Poland and in the former Soviet Republic of Georgia, given the fact that one was an economic approach, mm-hmm. the other one was a social approach?
So I think one thing we can learn is that both approaches have some effect, right? If you throw money at the problem, it does have some effect. Georgia did ultimately add some new financial incentives to have children as well, somewhat after the baptism campaign began. So economic effects matter. Social effects also matter. You can't just throw money at the problem. You need respected elites in society to lead by example and to lead by encouragement, to tell people, look, this is a thing we value as a society. This is a thing that we think is important, that part of the good life in this country means having kids, means celebrating the continuation of ultimately the American ideal in the next generation. And sometimes people will say, well, don't immigrants do that? And there's actually just a recent study that came out this week on Poland that showed that the indirect effect of immigration, that is the change to fertility rates due to immigrants, is in the long run substantially larger than the direct effect of just people crossing the border coming in. That is, the fertility effect of immigrants is bigger than the immigration effect of immigrants. We see this a lot of places. It's ultimately physically impossible to offset long-term low fertility with immigration. It can't go on forever because fertility is declining around the world. We're just running out of high fertility places to take immigrants from. So at the end of the day, what this can tell us for the U.S. is that solving low fertility requires a whole range of solutions. You've got to have cultural changes. You've got to have social changes. You've got to think about the life cycle you encourage people to live. And you may also need some financial support for families, women, and children.
Finally, we're both members of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Our church mm-hmm. body has done extensive demographic research recently that has shown that our membership decline is due primarily to lower birth rates about 30 mm-hmm. to 40 years ago. Can't be fixed now. What advice mm-hmm. can you give a denomination like the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod at large with respect to birth rate?
Yeah. So they're hard to turn around, right? Like I said, you know, when Patriarch Ilya offered to baptize, that was very influential for Georgian Orthodox believers. And like I said, if President Harrison offered to show up and do mass baptisms, I don't know that it would be as influential because we just don't have that same culture of personal spiritual leadership by a central leader. But nonetheless, there's tons of evidence that religious belief can fundamentally impact fertility. many of us Lutherans are German or we're Scandinavian or whatever. You know, ancestrally, we're Northern European, and we have imbibed the nectar of prudence for generations. We've learned the importance of planning, of preparing, of not taking too many risks. And the trouble is that a child is a risk. A child is a dangerous thing to bring into your life because it disrupts your life. And on some level, we have to, as a church body nationally, learn that there are risks worth taking and that some of this cultural Germanness that we've inherited is not biblical stewardship. It is just resistance to the possibility of losing per capita income in the household unit. And I say that as someone who has no children. I'd love to have children. I hope to soon, but just hasn't happened yet. That's one thing we can learn. But the trouble is that it won't be enough. The amount of fertility you can juice out of positively encouraging people to consider having children when they might not think they're quite ready, you can't juice a ton of fertility out of that. What you really have to do is you have to think bigger. You have to think, well, why aren't people having kids? Well, one reason is housing is expensive. Well, the nice thing about churches is that they can have tax-exempt property where, in principle, you could build housing. Why aren't people having kids? Well, education takes a long time and is usually not compatible with family life. Well, are we making our Concordia University system compatible with family life? If there's a 21-year-old woman who would like to get married and have kids but still wants to get a graduate degree, are our graduate programs enabling that? If not, then maybe they should. And finally, we have to think about immigration. Our church was built on immigrant conversion. If you map the rise of LCMS, and actually I've written about this fairly extensively, tracking the historic rise of LCMS and its precursor denominations back to the early 1800s, and our rise is a one-to-one correlation with the rise of German and Northern European and other Lutheran origin immigrants. It's a perfect correlation, essentially. And we say, well, now, okay, there's fewer German immigrants, so maybe that means we'll decline. But the reality is immigrants from countries with large Lutheran denominations are actually still a large population in the U.S. We're talking millions of people. Immigrants from Ethiopia, immigrants from Indonesia, immigrants from Sri Lanka and India, immigrants from large parts of former German colonies where there are tens of millions of Lutherans. I mean, there are more Lutherans today eating nasi goreng in Indonesia than there are eating lutefisk in Norway. And yet we still think of ourselves as this Northern European church. And it might just be that that needs to change, that we need to start understanding that our potlucks should probably include injera from Ethiopia because the median global Lutheran is Malagasy or Amharic speaking. So I think we need to think about how do we include immigrant communities that, by the way, also have higher fertility? How do we make sure that our church, that our preaching of the gospel is in fact reaching all of the nations who are already within the church, let alone those that we'd like to evangelize to? And that final point is evangelism, that yes, the church has declined because of lower birth rates, and that is sad. But at the end of the day, not all children born into the church stay in the church. The only ones that stay there are the ones who are properly evangelized through catechism and through good parents. But we also have to evangelize to people who aren't our children. And a church that does not evangelize, that does not knock on their neighbor's door and love their neighbor by sharing the gospel, is a church that in the end will die and deserves to die. A church without evangelism is simply not a church. So I think that, yes, we should try to encourage fertility. We should be thinking about how to include immigrant communities that may already be open to or already Lutheran. And also, we have to commit ourselves to actual evangelism, not just hoping someone wanders in our doors.
Lyman Stone is agricultural economist at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. He's advisor at Demographics Intelligence, author of recent columns titled Poland's Baby Bump and In Georgia, a Religiously Inspired Baby Boom. You can read them at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Lyman, thank you very much.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll go through some listener email and the Issues Etc. comment lineup live this Wednesday afternoon, April the 18th. The listener email, talkback@issuesetc.org, and the comment line, 618-223-8382.
What does Easter have to do with mission work? Find out in the April issue of the Lutheran Witness magazine, as you learn to see Christian missions through the lens of Easter and see Easter anew through the eyes of LCMS missionaries around the world. Celebrate Jesus' death and resurrection together with all the saints throughout time and to the very ends of the earth. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Are you a high schooler who enjoys theology? Do you know a high schooler who would make a good pastor or deaconess? Every summer, Concordia Theological Seminary offers programs for vocational discernment and theological education for high school students. Check out Christ Academy and Phoebe Academy this summer, June 17th through the 30th. Registrations open now. Email us at christacademy@ctsfw.edu or register online. Christ Academy at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, June 17th through the 30th.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth, Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
It is often misunderstood as sort of a to-do list for women.
Deaconess Elizabeth Allman, author of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Demystifying the Proverbs 31 Woman.
Or something that we have to strive to be, and it's very often pulled out of its moorings. It's pulled out of its context and not really put into the context of the rest of the book of Proverbs.
Learn more about demystifying the Proverbs 31 woman at issuesetc.org.